KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Two representatives from the Mountain West are seeking to strip presidential powers to designate national monuments and historic landmarks. But indigenous communities say the effort will remove a safeguard for sacred lands and pave the way for development. The Mountain West News Bureau's Yvette Fernandez has more.
Republican Representatives Mark Amadei of Nevada and Celeste Malloy of Utah say the Ending Presidential Overreach on Public Lands Act is about fairness. The legislation, Amadei says, would overturn a, quote, one-sided approach on major land management decisions by striking a section from the Antiquities Act of 1906. Matilda Guerrero Miller with Native Voters Alliance of Nevada sees the bill as an attempt to turn lands over to private interests.
What this bill is trying to do is to prevent more uses and protections of sacred spaces, all to protect and to better corporate greed for housing, for development.
During his first administration, Trump scaled back the acreage on the Grand Staircase Escalante and Bears Ears National Monument in Utah. Biden restored them. Biden also designated one of the newest national monuments, Avikwame, in Nevada. I'm Yvette Fernandez.
Navajo Nation officials recently agreed to allow shipments of uranium ore to cross the reservation after the tribe tried to stop trucks last summer near the Grand Canyon. KNAU's Ryan Heinches reports.
The company Energy Fuels says it'll limit uranium ore transport to specific routes and hours of the day and won't haul when public events or cultural celebrations are held. The company says it'll also prevent dust from escaping the trucks and allow the Navajo Nation to inspect the loads. Steve Etzedi is the executive director of the Navajo Nation Environmental Protection Agency.
We have put in place heightened safety measures for the communities where this transport will take place, and we have definitely received a lot more recognition of our role.
As part of the deal, Energy Fuels will also help remove 10,000 tons of uranium waste from abandoned mines left on the Navajo Nation by other companies decades ago as the federal government built its nuclear arsenal. The indigenous-led group Hall No, however, condemned the agreement and said cleanup of existing nuclear waste shouldn't be linked to creating more. Last summer, Energy Fuels began hauling ore from the mine near the south rim of the Grand Canyon. Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin tried to block the trucks. In the months since, Navajo officials and Energy Fuels have been in negotiations brokered by Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs. I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
Canadian Mounted Police are investigating four deaths on a reserve in Saskatchewan. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, police say the victims may have been targeted.
The Carry the Kettle Nakota Nation is about 50 miles east of Regina. Police have confirmed that the deaths of two men and two women are being considered as homicides. RCMP Inspector Ashley St. Germain reassured people that there was no risk to the public at this time. She says officers are working to identify suspects in what is a complex case, and there is no information to confirm that the suspects are still at large.
The Saskatchewan RCMP has a family liaison team working with the families of those believed to be the victims to provide them with investigational updates and connect them with the necessary support services.
St. Germain asks that anyone with information should contact police. The chief of a nearby First Nation offered her condolences and said this horrific event affected everyone deeply. And she said in the coming days, her community walks alongside the people of Carry the Kettle Nakota Nation as they carry the burden of these losses. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
DT Track, your healthcare partner, provides access to a nationwide network of qualified healthcare temporary staff, including medical billing professionals that optimize your revenue cycles. More at dt-track.com who support this show.
Support by the American Indian College Fund, providing millions of dollars of scholarships to Native students every year. Applications are accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org or by phone at 800-766-FUND.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Private enterprise, it would be called a company ending event. And in government, it's called, I don't know, stupidity, I guess.
State lawmakers confront a bleak budget picture as they look to fund priorities. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, February 6th. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, Juneau residents join a nationwide protest against President Trump's executive orders.
Trump going after the Department of Education, that's my most concerning because I have a son who's in the elementary. And he receives services, you know, that he needs.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing are important to you, consider applying for a seat on the Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Needed are rural Alaskans knowledgeable about fish and wildlife resources in their region. Apply by Sunday, February 16th. More information at 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence at ios.doi.gov. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
State lawmakers have tough choices ahead as they look to balance the budget while also pursuing the priorities of the House and Senate's Democrat-dominated majority caucuses. That's according to legislative budget analysts who recently told House and Senate budget writers that the same old won't cut it this year. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports.
Back in December, Governor Mike Dunleavy proposed his version of the budget and came with a full statutory permanent fund dividend of about $3,800 per Alaskan. It also came with a $1.5 billion deficit, which, fun fact, is about half the balance in the state's primary savings account. Dunleavy's budget director, Lacey Sanders, says the governor doesn't see much choice but to propose mega dividends. For years, he's said things like, the legacy formula is the law, and I'm going to follow the law. But even Sanders says the $1.5 billion deficit isn't ideal.
The fiscal picture is not looking great when you are depleting over half of it in 1 year.
Senate Finance Committee co-chair Bert Stedman characteristically puts it a bit more bluntly.
In private enterprise, it would be called a company-ending event. And in government, it's called, I don't know, stupidity, I guess.
For the last 2 years, lawmakers have settled on something of an informal formula for setting the PFD amount. 25% of the state's annual drawdown from this permanent fund goes to dividends, with the other three quarters going to regular state services like state troopers, roads, and public schools. This year, using that same 75-25 formula would leave the state with a $30 million surplus. That's basically balanced right on the edge, but that's before you count some baseline priorities for the legislature. After adding in status quo education funding to keep up with one-time funding last year, plus some expected increases in Medicaid expenses and labor contracts, well, Legislative Finance Division Director Alexi Painter says lawmakers will need to find nearly $200 million somewhere.
You're going to have to either find other budget reductions, reduce the dividend further, or explore new revenue options. You can't just do that one thing and it's solved, which has worked kind of the last 2 years.
To be clear, this is not the situation that lawmakers thought they would find themselves in when they left town last year. Legislative leaders said they had balanced the budget, even left a small surplus. But Alaska is a state often at the mercy of the markets, and here in 2025, things don't look quite so rosy. Oil prices and production are down slightly, and that, plus a bump in tax-deductible oil and gas lease spending, means all that surplus has turned into another deficit. And though Dunleavy and President Donald Trump have talked a lot about increasing oil and gas production, that might, paradoxically, be bad news for oil prices in future years. Here's Stedman again.
If the direction out of Washington, the new administration, is to increase oil supply across the nation, there's a reasonable chance that oil prices will have downward pressure, then upward pressure, and we could be in trouble fast in a year or two.
After all, it's expensive and difficult to drill in the Arctic. And though the winds are changing, projects have also faced numerous legal hurdles that add to the cost. Pumping more out of, say, the Permian Basin in Texas is a heck of a lot easier. And that's if companies even want to boost production when prices are already fairly low and global demand is moderating. So those are the options: reduce spending, raise revenue, cut the dividend, or draw from savings. Senate President Gary Stevens, a Kodiak Republican, says that last option, drawing from savings, likely won't get support from his caucus.
We're not going to do it, I don't believe. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
There's also a political dimension to that. Drawing on savings would require support from minority Republicans in both chambers, since it takes a three-quarters majority to withdraw from the Constitutional Budget Reserve. That could give Republicans leverage that the largely Democratic bipartisan majorities would rather avoid. As for revenue, there hasn't been much movement on bills that could bring more money into the state. Here's Representative Will Stapp, a Fairbanks Republican on the House Finance Committee.
I hear 99 things people want to spend money on. But I'm a little shocked I haven't seen any new revenue bills or tax bills come out of the majority or anything like that yet.
That doesn't mean it won't happen, but it's not something the majorities have said is a major priority in the same way that they've talked about other things like public sector pensions and education funding. And speaking of education funding, that's an area where majority lawmakers would like to see state spending expand rather than shrink. The leading House education bill would add roughly $150 million to education spending over the status quo. That's pushing budgeters like Senator Lyman Hoffman, a Democrat from Bethel who co-chairs the Finance Committee, to tamp down expectations.
The appetites in this building need to be ratcheted down. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to balance FY26 budget.
But for now, some are still holding out hope for a lucky break, like independent Anchorage Representative Elise Galvin.
I will be crossing my fingers regarding the price of oil.
Lawmakers have until the end of the session in mid-May to determine the best way forward. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
More than 100 Juneau residents took to the sidewalk across the street from the Alaska State Capitol Wednesday afternoon to join a nationwide protest against President Donald Trump's administration and its recent executive orders. As KTUO's Clarice Larson reports, demonstrators say those orders could have far-reaching effects in Alaska.
Protect our democracy! Reject Project 2025!
The slushy sidewalk across the street from the Alaska State Capitol is packed full of people. More than 100 protesters chant and wave signs in the sunshine, denouncing the Trump administration and its policies, especially Elon Musk and Project 2025. In his first week in office, Trump signed dozens of executive orders that could have tremendous impacts on Alaskans, from climate change to oil exploration to birthright citizenship. The Juneau protest on Wednesday afternoon is part of a nationwide movement called 50-51, which stands for 50 protests, 50 states, one day. Thousands of demonstrators also marched at state capitals across the nation, including Minnesota, Texas, and Montana. Jamie Ann Saethten Hasselquist is a local advocate.
So again, we're asking our legislature to protect our democracy. Protect our democracy!
Protect our democracy!
Protect our democracy! She led the chants and spoke to the crowd. She called on residents to band together to protect the rights of immigrants, Alaska Native people, and other vulnerable populations impacted by the recent orders. Protester Luma Diaz wore an Argentinian flag wrapped around her like a cape. She held a sign that invoked the resistance fighters from the Star Wars movies with a picture of Princess Leia. And she had a matching hairstyle. Diaz says she showed up to support immigration and women's rights.
Well, I'm Argentinian, so I'm an immigrant, and I believe that we do belong in this country, regardless of our social status or immigration status. We are the ones that make America great. Part of that.
Juneau resident Paul DeSlover held a tall sign that blended the names of the president and Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy. He says he feels like he's experiencing deja vu.
Well, actually, I made this sign 4 years ago for a protest.
DeSlover says he came to push back against the Trump administration's crackdown on immigration and LGBTQ plus rights. He says he thinks Trump's actions are influencing how Governor Dunleavy acts here in Alaska, and that makes him nervous.
Our governor is just like Trump. His policies, his attitude towards government is the same, and it's destructive to democracy.
Another protester, Maggie Drapeau, says she's worried about Trump's efforts to eliminate the U.S. Department of Education. Currently, Juneau has 5 designated Title I schools, meaning they receive a share of federal funding that the state allocates to districts to support students.
Trump going after the Department of Education, that's my most concerning because I have a son who's in the elementary and he receives services, you know, that he needs to be functioning.
At least a couple state lawmakers joined the crowd, including Juneau House Representative Sarah Hannan, a Democrat. She explained what she's been hearing from her constituents.
I mean, a lot of fear and anxiety, a lot of concern, you know, in this state. The economics over cutting off of federal grants and services is pretty significant in Alaska because we get a lot of federal money to keep us going.
Protesters chanted for nearly an hour before marching through downtown Juneau, some singing along to the tune of The Times They Are Changin', a Bob Dylan song that was adopted by civil rights and anti-war activists.
Oh, the times they are a-changin'.
With help from Jamie Deep, I'm Clarice Larson in Juneau.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, no mushers embark on a reenactment of the serum run that saved lives a century ago.
This is such a like close connection to what they did. Just like being behind the sled with these amazing dogs and like watching them work.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You can make a difference in the lives of Alaskans. Every year, hundreds of nonprofits provide warm meals, safe places, and resources to hundreds of thousands of Alaskans. By supporting Alaska's nonprofits when you apply for your PFD, you're giving more opportunity, more hope, more chances. This year, make more possible with the click of a button. Don't forget to give via PickClick Give when you apply for your PFD. This message sponsored by PickClick Give.
The FBI has charged a Texas man who worked as a temporary school bus driver in Fairbanks with possession of digital images depicting child sexual abuse. A news release issued Wednesday by the U.S. Attorney's Office in Anchorage says the FBI arrested 60-year-old Scott O'Toole earlier this week and charged him with one count of child pornography. The release says FBI investigators with the Anchorage FBI field office began working on the case in December after Fairbanks police gave them a USB drive that allegedly had images and videos of child sexual abuse. Fairbanks police told the agents the memory storage device was found in a Fairbanks hotel's business center. Forensic investigators traced the device to O'Toole, who was staying at the hotel while working as a school bus driver in Fairbanks during November and December. FBI agents arrested him in Texas, and a U.S. Attorney's Office spokesperson said he's now being held there on the child pornography charge. According to the news release, if convicted, O'Toole faces up to 20 years in prison. The case is still under investigation by the FBI, Fairbanks Police Department, and Texas State Troopers. Investigators are asking anyone with information about O'Toole to contact the FBI Anchorage Field Office at 907-276-4441. Anonymous tips can be submitted online to tips.fbi.gov. Meanwhile, for the first time, teacher housing is coming to Naknek, funded through a grant from the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The Bristol Bay Borough will cover the remaining costs. In November, the Bristol Bay Borough School District was awarded nearly $500,000 from the corporation's Rural Professional Housing Grants Fund to build two duplexes for teachers. The program, funded by the state, supports housing projects for schools, corporations, and other organizations in Alaska communities. The district was one of eight awardees for 2025. Shannon Harvilla is the superintendent of the Bristol Bay Borough School District. He says the need for teacher housing has been on the district's radar for years.
Our biggest barrier to finding quality candidates is the uncertainty of housing. We've always been willing to help talk to local individuals willing to rent, but a lot of them only rent in the winter and come occupy their properties in the summer for the fishing season. So having year-round residences for the teachers makes them a more integral part of our community.
However, the grant fell short of the $700,000 the district estimated for the project. The borough will cover the difference in cost and also manage it. Harvilla says the borough's support during the grant application process was key to moving the project forward.
The small district, it was really time-consuming. I worked on it pretty much solely myself. We don't have any district support staff over here. But with the support of the borough manager, the borough staff, and some people with a little more expertise in construction than I have, we were able to pull it together.
The two duplexes will be built on an empty lot next to the school, across from the basketball court and overlooking the tundra. The project will provide housing for four teachers, a third of the 12 teachers the school district employs when fully staffed. If the units are vacant in the summer, Harvilla says they will be used to house seasonal city employees such as EMTs, clinicians, and law enforcement. Plans for occupancy policies, such as how long teachers can stay in the units and whether the housing will be subsidized, are still being finalized. As of now, Harvilla says they will charge market rates for rent. The district does not plan to profit from the project. Construction is expected to begin this spring, with the goal of completing the housing by December. The contract for the construction is currently out for bid. And Ketchikan is now officially classified as rural in the eyes of federal subsistence regulations. The historic landmark decision by the Federal Subsistence Board overrules a recent vote by the Regional Advisory Council to keep Ketchikan status as non-rural. The federal board handed down its decision last night during its twice annual regulatory meeting in Anchorage. KRBD's Jack Darrell has more.
For years, the Ketchikan Indian community has argued that Ketchikan's non-rural designation has prevented tribal citizens from practicing their traditional subsistence way of life. And they argued that Ketchikan is not urban in the same way as a larger community like Anchorage or Fairbanks, which is why the tribe's president, Gloria Burns, says this decision is a huge deal.
I mean, this is life-changing. This is going to open, I think they said, like a million five acres of land in our own area that we can go ahead and now subsist off of.
The tribe first proposed reconsidering Ketchikan's non-rural status in 2022. Ketchikan's municipal government and the Ketchikan borough supported it. Then the feds conducted a formal two-year study into the idea. And the results of that study were presented to the Southeast Alaska Regional Subsistence Advisory Council last year. After lengthy and tense deliberations, the council formally opposed the tribe's request. It's pretty rare for the federal board to go against the recommendations of the Regional Advisory Council. Burns says things look grim for the tribe going into this week's final decision.
I was shocked. I just started crying and I got up and Irene and I, we held each other and it was just, this is a fight that has been going on for years. And so the people of our area, our tribal citizens, this has been a long fought fight.
But this decision means that all residents of the Ketchikan area, not just the Ketchikan Indian community, but everyone, are now federally qualified subsistence users. They can now hunt and fish for food on federally managed lands and waters under subsistence rules. When the Regional Advisory Council voted against the proposal last year, many board members said the problem wasn't giving the Native community more subsistence hunting opportunities. They all supported that. It was that it would give everyone else in Ketchikan those opportunities too, and they couldn't reconcile that impact. A lot of Prince of Wales Island residents opposed the change. They said an entire population of Ketchikan subsistence users would put a strain on the island's already limited deer population. Tasia Wagner manages tribal relations and fisheries data for the nearby Metlakatla Indian community. Her family has fished ooligan from the Unuk River for generations. She said she's happy for Ketchikan's tribal members who are getting their subsistence rights back.
But this is more than just, you know, several hundred or so tribal members. This is thousands of people that could overwhelm.
Wagner says smaller communities like hers are already having to compete for the region's resources.
My largest concern is an already, you know, low resource could be exhausted, because once those emergency closures happen, the ones that pay for it greatly are those that are in truly rural, remote, isolated villages and communities. For a lot of them, the closest market or grocery store is an hour or two away.
Tribal President Burns says they've been cut off from a traditional subsistence lifestyle for a long time. She says the next step for the Ketchikan tribe is to gather data and knowledge on how to do this the right way.
We have this responsibility now, particularly to our neighbors and to ourselves, to get this right. This is really an amazing day for Ketchikan Indian community. Amazing week, and it's an amazing time, I think, for Ketchikan.
The Federal Subsistence Board approved the decision 7-3. In Ketchikan, with reporting help from Michael Finelli, I'm Jack Darrell.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
GCI, keeping schools and students connected across the state with a resilient and redundant network. Details at gci.com/education. Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. Learn more at aliaskapipeline.com.
IBEW's path to success includes excellent training, good wages, benefits, and a comfortable retirement. Join the IBEW and build a bright future. Call 907-575-7285 to find out more. This message sponsored by IBEW Local 1547.
Skagway's biggest restaurant is hiring, and they need an indoor gardener to tend to their aeroponic lettuce and herb farm. KHNS reporter Melinda Munson examined the greens and learned how beer and lettuce can work together.
The sound of lettuce growing is louder than one might expect. That's the aeroponic garden at Skagway's Brewing Company. It's a combination of precise temperature regulation, a spritz of water rich nutrients every 5 minutes, and CO2 getting pumped up from the brewery below. Greg Hayes is cutting heads of lettuce that sprout from small circles on a panel that hangs from the ceiling. He's the restaurant's marketing manager, but this winter, he's also its interim farm assistant. Hayes explains why the intricate system makes sense in a small, remote town.
Here in Skagway, we're at the wrong end of a long barge trip from the lower 48, which is how we get all of our groceries and most of our other supplies. And the quality of the produce is not always what you would hope for. But also having our own space like this allows us to grow more varieties of lettuce that you don't typically find at other restaurants up here.
There are several varieties of lettuce growing, including red oak and Rhone. The room produces about 200 pounds of lettuce weekly, along with herbs like basil and cilantro. He says he's become particular about his greens.
If I was to blind test you and put a regular salad off the barge in front of you and a brocco salad and they looked the same, would you be able to tell the difference?
They wouldn't look the same, but yes, absolutely. First of all, they don't send up lettuces like we are grown upstairs. So we've got 7 different types of lettuce.
Hayes is looking forward to this week's season opening. He has already planned out his dinner selection.
My favorite thing on our menu is one of our salads, the blackened halibut, because I love our lettuce, but the halibut as a fish has a really delicate flavor, and even with the blackening season on it, we have lettuce that is only fed water and nutrients. It doesn't pick up any terroir, so it's got this, you know, real bright, crisp, delicate flavor that complements the fish.
Eric Strathy was the restaurant's farm director until he moved away at the end of last season. He describes how making Spruce Blonde Ale, the brewery's most popular beer, contributes to lettuce production.
So when the fermentation process is taking place downstairs and the yeast off-gasses CO2, it gets directly piped right into the farm. And what the CO2 does is it creates vigorous growth in plants in general. And what it does is it really speeds up the photosynthesis process.
The CO2 that feeds the farm is sometimes called beer gas. Strathy says the farm is a great teaching tool. Free tours are available each day throughout the tours season.
We have a large window facade there, a large window facing into the farm there, so you can see it all. And groups would come up there and look through, and I would come out and speak with them. And the reaction was just lots of questions, and everybody was very excited when they'd see that.
Besides beer gas, manager Hayes of Skagway Brewing Company implements other sustainable practices. They compost as much as they can in the community garden and use cardboard takeout boxes. In the near future, they hope to install rooftop solar panels and turn cooking oil into biodiesel to heat the building and fuel the brewery. Hayes says the head gardener position remains open until they find the right applicant. Disclosure, this reporter's spouse worked at Skagway Brewing Company through October 2024. In Skagway, I'm Melinda Munson.
3 dog mushing teams in Nome hit the trail last weekend for a symbolic reenactment of the 1925 Serum Run, a legendary tale that spawned books and movies and is credited with saving the town from diphtheria. KNOM's Ben Townsend tagged along by Snow Machine for this story.
Visibility's terrible.
I know, huh? White on white.
White on white.
From the backseat of a snow machine, a dull orange dot hovers on the horizon. It slowly gets bigger and darker as we approach. Our headlight finally pierces the fog, illuminating Jessica Lemaire and her 9 dogs effortlessly fluttering across the snowy tundra.
We put each other's lives in each other's hands, paws,
they trust you to take care of them, feed them, love them, get them out on cool adventures. And I trust them that if we get into some sticky situations, like, there's a decent chance we're going to make it home.
Lemaire moved to Nome just 5 years ago and founded the Comstock Kennel with her husband, Tim Lemaire. She's joined on trail by Sarah Richards and Garrick Fuller. The 100th anniversary of the famous Serum Run has been on their minds for a while now. They hope to mush the historic 674-mile run from Nenana to Nome, but settled for the simpler and shorter Out and Back to Safety Sound. It's cold out, but not quite as cold as the night Gunnar Kaysen made the same journey from Safety to Nome. The Norwegian braved negative temperatures and gale-force winds as his dog team, led by Balto, completed the original run. Lemaire says the dogs are the common denominator.
Even though, like, the technology has changed, we have snow machines, the dogs themselves are doing the exact same thing they did 100 years ago.
We settle for the night at Camp Nook, a large cabin on a thin spit separating Safety Sound from the Bering Sea. The mushers tie up their lines. They only have light from their headlamps. It darts across the sparkling white snow as they divvy up a bale of straw, melt snow, and prepare dinner for their teams. Inside, Keen Richards prepares a wood stove to heat the cabin and dry out our clothes. I drop off a tote with firewood as he tends to the fledgling fire.
I think we got more wood in here. Let's see. Yeah, big logs.
The next morning, the mushers are back outside with their dog teams. While the dogs eat breakfast, we take a chance to reflect on Kaysen's heroic final stretch into town.
100 years ago, today, 100 feet that way,
yeah,
that was happening.
Like, yeah, today.
Right here.
Yeah.
Like, what sort of weight does that put on you guys?
This is such a, like, close connection to what they did. Just, like, being behind the sled with these amazing dogs and, like, watching them work.
Just, like, incredible that we get to do that. Be a small part of this story that extends so far beyond locally. Like, it's more, mm-hmm. it's more than just, like, a local Nome story. You know, it went countrywide and worldwide.
Are you ready?
Around noon, the teams leave camp one by one.
I'm definitely having a step on my drag brake. They are excited to get back to Nome and to go meet all the kids waiting for them. Woohoo! Easy, easy. Good dogs. All right, we're at the mouth of the Nome River.
We make one final stop to get all three dog teams together for the final stretch into Nome. As an airplane flies overhead, Richards realizes the importance dog teams held for centuries.
We don't rely on dogs anymore to carry in the mail. I think it's still really important to preserve that history. It's such a huge part of our culture, and being able to share that with other people, especially with kids, it's really important to me.
Over on Lemaire's sled, she's rapping.
Let's just get this straight for a minute. I'ma work even if I don't get paid for a minute.
The teams round a corner around the seawall where a crowd of supporters await.
Whoa!
Richards unwraps a white box.
All right, who wants some serum?
And hands them over to employees of Norden Sound Regional Hospital.
Thanks for coming.
Nome saved.
Yes, Nome has been saved.
From the end of the historic Serum Run, I'm Ben Townsend.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Eric Stone and Clarice Larson in Juneau, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, Margaret Sutherland in Dillingham, Jack Darrell and Michael Finelli in Ketchikan, Melinda Munson in Skagway, and Ben Townsend in Nome. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Wesley Early. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
Start your day with a quick look at the most important stories from around the state with Alaska Morning News, your dose of headlines each weekday morning. With reporters covering every corner of Alaska, you can be sure you're up to date on the stories that matter to Alaskans. Join me, Ava White, for Alaska Morning News, weekdays on your local public radio station.
Public Media loves being part of your day. Thank you for listening and for your support. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
My best friend gave me the best advice. He said each day's a gift and not a given right. Leave no stone unturned. Leave your fears behind. And try to take the path less traveled by. That first step you take is the longest ride. If today was your last day, and tomorrow was too late, could you say goodbye yesterday? Or would you live each moment like your last? Leave old pictures in the past, donate every dime you have. If today was your last day, against the grain should be your way of life. What's worth the prize is always worth the fight. Every second counts, cause there's no second try. So live it like you've never lived it twice. Don't take the free ride in your own life. If today was your life, tomorrow was too late, could you say goodbye yesterday? Would you live each moment like your last? Leave old pictures in the past, donate every dime you have. And would you call those friends you never seen? Reminisce on memories, would you forgive your enemies? And would you find that one? You make your mark by mending a broken heart. You know it's never too late to shoot for the stars, regardless of who you are. So do whatever it takes, cause you can't rewind a moment in this life. Just say goodbye to yesterday. Or would you live each moment like your last? Leave old pictures in the past. Donate every dime you have. And would you call on friends you never seen? Reminisce on memories. Would you forgive your enemies? And would you find that one you dream in us? Where I'm
this everything, baby, honestly. I've given this everything, baby, honestly. Tell me what you've done for my life.
Just pretending, dreaming dreams of happiness.
punch him out with your blah blah blah. Zip your lip like a padlock. Yeah. And meet me in the back with the jack of the jukebox. I don't care where you live at. Just turn around, boy. Let me hit that. Don't be a little bitch with your chit chat. Just show me where your dick is. Listen, high. Can that blah, blah, blah. Think you'll be getting this? Nah, 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 not in the back of my car. If you keep talking that blah, 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 blah. Boy, come on, get my rocks off. Come put a little love in my glove box. Yeah. Wanna dance with no pants on? Meet me in the back with a jack of the jukebox. Cut to the chase, kid, cause I know you don't care what my middle name is. And you're wasted.
I'm never laying the deal. I'm saying blah, blah, blah. Cause I don't care who you are in this bar. It only matters who I am.
That's how talking that blah, blah.
My friends stopped calling me. They said I need to tell you to set me free, but I don't wanna let you go. When my situation gets me down, I think about the way we used to run the town, and now you won't let me go. It's the sweetest thing I've ever known. My own worst enemy. I can't get enough when you sing to me. The people wouldn't understand. I'll never be an independent man. My own worst enemy. The only thing I'll ever need. I know that I'm lonely in your eyes. I'm just one of a million guys, and I don't wanna let you go. When these long nights get me down, I think back to the way we used to run the town. You saw me and you shut the door, and it only made me love you more. I'll never be an independent man. My own,
the people wouldn't understand. I'll never be an independent man.